It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome back to the Prospect Podcast, where we speak to the brightest minds about the ideas that matter in politics, society and culture. I'm Ellen Halliday, Deputy Editor at Prospect Magazine, and I'm delighted to be joined by Stuart Jeffries. Stuart is a journalist and author who's written for Prospect a couple of times now, and his most recent book is Everything, All the Time, Everywhere, How We Became Postmodern, which is published by Verso. Stuart, it's lovely to have you with us.
Thank you, lovely to be here.
So you're here to talk to us about quite an interesting subject that we set you on for the magazine, which is money, is cash specifically, dying out? So tell us, what did you find out? Are we losing cash in our society? And what does it tell us about the world in which we now live?
Well, we lost the will to spend in cash quite a while ago once we started finding more convenient ways to do it. You know, it's much easier to swipe a card rather than to fiddle in your pockets for change. I remember the days when, you know, my trousers were ruined, you know, regularly by having pound coins falling through the pockets, you know. And seriously, it used to be quite an issue. I'm sure it was a conspiracy, the more I think about it, by cotton manufacturers to get me to stitch up my trouser pockets. I'm at the stage now where I haven't had cash in my wallet for about 6 months, and that problem's been added to by the fact that I've forgotten my PIN number. So I don't really know how to access payments without using my phone, which makes me a complete mark for the, you know, for Apple Pay and for companies who want my digital data. So why would I enter into that horrible Faustian pact? You know, why would I want to do that apart from saving my trousers? I think the real reason is that there was a big push during the pandemic, where money was regarded, one, as being filthy and, you know, a contaminant, even though banks were assuring us that it was kind of, you know, cleaned and everything was fine. But also it involved more physical contact than we were comfortable with. So we stepped away from money there. But even before that, there was a huge push through the use of technology to get away from cash in order to achieve certain socially desirable goals, such as cutting down on the dark economies, black economies. You know, the idea of being paid in cash essentially meant that, you know, if you paid cash to a workman, you're essentially saying you're not going to declare your tax. You know, you entered into a horrible conspiracy. So the idea is that would be reduced, by the payments through digital means, where you always leave a digital imprint. So those sort of factors were important. But the other thing was, in countries such as Sweden and China, where there's massive kind of, well, two things really. Social conformity is quite important. And two, they're very sophisticated digitally. They've got very high penetration of, you know, digital devices and phones particularly. It all became very useful for governments there to try and influence behaviour by using what non-anonymous bearer instrument. Anonymous,
that's a bit wordy, isn't it?
Yeah. Anonymous bearer instruments. That really means cash, I think. So you know, there's no record of where it came from when you pay in John Lewis or wherever for anything with your cash. But if you pay for it with a card, of course, it's going to be a record. Governments like that. And also, so do tech companies like that, because they can have get a profile of you and get information about you, which they can use to find data, you know, to control society, I suppose, and also to control your behaviour and nudge your behaviour in interesting ways.
So to what extent is cash disappearing from a society? What do we know about this trend?
Well, in 2017, debit card payments overtook cash for the first time, and that trend was accelerated by COVID, where people didn't really want to pay with physical cash. So that by some estimates, by 2043, we will be completely cashless.
That's in the UK?
In the UK. And there are other societies where that will happen. It's likely to happen or predicted to happen faster, in particularly Nordic countries and China, for some reason.
So the reduction of the use of cash, you've got some kind of consumer choice. You don't want holes in your trousers. You find it easier to use your card. But at the same time, you have governments, big tech companies kind of nudging people away from cash and towards using card, or as you say, your phone increasingly as well. So it's coming from both sides, but you use the word there, control. And some people, and you write about this in a piece that you've written for Prospect, some people are really worried by this sense of control. Who are they? What exactly are their concerns, and are they right?
I think some of their concerns are well-founded, because with cash, people don't know where you got it from, really. You don't, and so if you go into a shop, as Piers Corbyn, who's you know, Jeremy's brother and a well-known conspiracy theorist who doesn't believe in, he's worried about a lot of new forms of state control, such as, you know, ULEZ and 15-minute cities and all that kind of stuff. He fixated on this issue by going to an Aldi, a cashless Aldi in Greenwich, where it was obviously a stunt, but he went in to buy a punnet of strawberries. And he could have equally have gone across the square to the Sainsbury's, which is not cashless, so he could have bought these strawberries with cash there. But he was making a point, which is that he didn't want to go into a shop. He thought it was his right. He thought it was his right to go into a shop, spend his cash on these strawberries and leave. Now, as Bank of England will tell you, that's not really how money works. Money is, there's discretion on the part of the seller as to whether they're going to accept your chosen means of payment. You know, if you come in with a £50 note and, you know, you want to go out with a bunch of bananas, people are going to be quite unhappy about that and say no. Or if you're, you know, you've got a Scottish pound note, a Scottish £50 note, and you want to buy something in an English shop, as you well know, there's going to be problems.
Yeah, I was devastated to discover that the legal tender argument is not, in fact, a valid argument for insisting a shopkeeper take your...
Isn't it really interesting? And you can see in the video that he released in high dudgeon, you know, to his followers, that he believes that it is, you know, legal tender means that I can give you my money and I'm now going to walk out with and actually the staff, who were quite annoyed with him for behaving in this rather snooty way to them, you know, they're shouting at him, you know, you can't take that. Also, you can't leave. You can't, this terrible thing, actually, you can't leave the shop because there are these gates which are only activated by the app, which he clearly didn't have because he'd only got the cash. So he breaks through these gates and goes outside and does this triumphal video. There's no cash desk, so he went up to the help desk and put down his £1.30, whatever it was, in coins on the desk, said, I've completed this transaction. I'm now going to leave, as he says, this dystopian place, which is kind of hilarious. And there's these, presumably, I don't know what Aldi's employment practices are like, but probably these quite low-paid workers having to, you know, deal with this rather posh bloke. I don't think he actually stole anything, really. It'd be quite interesting to see a legal case. What would be the case there, you know? But he certainly didn't do what he should have done in that shop.
But this speaks to a bigger point about his concerns, which some may interpret as completely out there, but others may say, well, actually, look, I'm tired of being tracked everywhere. I don't want big companies and I don't want the state to know everywhere I go and everything I spend. Yeah. And they do kind of have a point, don't they, that it's increasingly difficult for us to be anonymous, and the reduction of cash in society makes that even harder. For some people, that might be fine, but there are other people who might have valid reasons for not wanting the state to know exactly where they go all of the time, and that could be an individual choice, right? So
absolutely, but you know, in this sort of dystopian science fiction, that I'm still thinking of Dave Eggers' novel *The Circle*, where essentially there's a tech company which has this mantra, which is that you know, secrets are lies and privacy is theft. You know, these are the Orwellian things. The idea is that you should. Why do you want to live off the grid? What have you got to hide? You're clearly hiding something which is probably to do with, you know, drugs or something nefarious. So any lack of transparency is questionable, and that's the thing at the anti-Corbynite perspective. I, you know, Corbyn is worried that oversight is Orwellian and it's used to control us, and he has some fair points, I think, about that, because you know there is a history of cash payments, particularly to vulnerable people, being made on condition that you do certain things. You know, that you will get a certain amount of money, say as benefit payments. This happened in Brazil in the 90s. If you got your kid vaccinated, you would get your benefit payments. If you didn't get your kid vaccinated and they didn't, and then got a very good school record, you would not get that money. You know, so there is a form of social control and nudging, but. The idea is, I suppose, the state's argument and tech companies' argument is it's quite a benign thing, you know. It's actually trying to achieve good social goals. Piers Corbyn doesn't believe that, you know. He just thinks this is state overreach and it should be resisted. Mm-hmm. Maybe he's got a point. I mean, you know, I feel invaded by a lot of, you know, a lot of my digital interactions. I really don't want to give data to people all the time. I don't really question why. It's just that there's a natural cussedness, I think, where you just think, I don't really want to tell you that. Why do you need to know that about me? You know? And I don't want to sign up for your newsletter. And, you know, all of that stuff, you just don't want to be on the grid so much, you know.
I think many people would feel increasingly they don't have a choice.
Right.
Because, you know, used to be there were a range of options, ways to pay, ways to sign up for public services, those kind of things. And increasingly the only way is digital, right? So that choice has been removed a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. But that does make one romanticise the, you know, anonymous cash bearer instruments, i.e. money. It makes you think, well, wasn't that a wonderful, you know, liberating phenomenon? And yet the history of money suggests the complete opposite. The history of money suggests we bewitched, you know, we replaced gods by mammon. You know, we just bowed to these new gods. This is what Marx tells us. You know, we just believe that there's this incredible power in cash, in money, and we're enthralled to it. And that's why, in a way, the people like Piers Corbyn have arisen or focused on the issue because they hate the idea that money has this control over us. I think, in a way, they've drawn their battle in the wrong place, in the battle lines in the wrong place, because what they should be doing is burning money rather than, you know, venerating it, you know.
And some people are doing that, which is almost an aside in this piece that you've written for us, but it's fascinating that there's a movement you found of people who burn cash and record how much cash they're burning. I mean, tell us about what we know about, you know, this loose group. I don't know how organised they are.
Oh, they're probably, yeah, they're probably not very closely affiliated, or at least, you know, for legal purposes aren't. But, you know, you're too young to remember the KLF in the 90s when they were this sort of art school, art provocateurs, I guess they were. Two Scottish guys who just burnt £1 million on the island of Jura after having quite a successful series of hit singles for the band KLF. Tammy Wynette sung on one of their songs. That's how big they were. They were a really big deal. But they burned a lot of money. They burnt £1 million because it was like a sacrificial rite. We are not controlled by money. We are going to burn it. Apparently the legacy of it is that... I think it's Jimmy Courtney, was it Bill Drummond? One of them's got kids now who get teased in the playground all the time because their dad burned £1 million, you know, literally burned £1 million in this fire. The reason for doing so is to destroy its aura, you know, and it's a phenomenon that arose in the late 60s, you know, in a countercultural process, and there are people doing it even now. You know, they'll meet in... you know, fairly secret places and burn money and keep, this is the ironic thing, of course, keep a record of it, which is accessible digitally.
It's sort of a, you know, free to access spreadsheet on the internet.
Yeah.
People drop in their names, how much they've burned, where they burned it. It's really curious.
Yeah, isn't it? It's such a strange phenomenon. And good for them. I mean, I think if they want to, you know, it's clearly their privilege to do that, and good for them if they want to. But, you know, I'm not sure what it means in terms of everyday people or poor people's relationship with money. You know, is it liberating it? They're trying to destroy the cash nexus. They're trying to destroy the relationship between the economics and politics. They're trying to create a new romantic order, you know, a post-capitalist order. Maybe they aren't succeeding very well. I mean, clearly they're not, because actually what's happening is cash is being steadily supplanted by something which is perhaps, you know, more nefarious.
Yeah.
After the break, we'll talk more about what a cashless society would be like. But first, I'd like to tell you about an offer from Prospect. You can enjoy 1 month's free trial to Prospect's digital content and get full access to rigorously fact-checked, truly independent analysis and perspectives. There's no commitment and you can cancel at any time. To take advantage of this great deal, please search for Prospect 1 month free trial offer.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
There are other forms of transactions now on a much bigger scale that, you know, in terms of cryptocurrencies, NFTs, all of these kind of what I think we call tokens that have arguably been far more successful in moving people away from cash, but have also brought with them all kinds of problems. Do you see a long-term future in these other kinds of tokens? Can we distinguish, or do we need to distinguish between cryptocurrencies and NFTs as being, some of them being useful, some of them perhaps being a fad?
Yeah, I mean, certainly those, they're speculative. Some of them have been speculative bubbles. You know, people have just really got excited that they could make money fast, and some people haven't. Some people have lost lots of money. I think the what was interesting for me, at least, in thinking about cryptocurrencies was the utopian impulse, which was to get away from state control again. You know, get away from central bank control, because that was regarded as corrupt and forcing other people's values on you. So there's this notion, sort of rather confusing, which I don't really understand, not being a financial or tech expert, to be honest, of the blockchain, which is that there's a distributed ledger, so that, you know, nobody really knows, nobody's really in control of the processing of the payments. So it's very much unlike a central bank, or you know, where it's clear where the money comes from and where it's going to. So it is approximating what the idea of cash ideally would have been like, i.e. it's anonymous, you know, all these transactions, nobody really knows who's bought what, and nobody really can call you on it in a way that, say, if you bought something through Apple Pay, you know, if I bought some, you know, illicit, you know, if I bought some porn on in the hotel room through Apple Pay, my wife could find out about it. If I bought, you know, the whole idea of Bitcoin and cryptocurrency at that level is that, you know, nobody's ever going to find out what you bought or why, you know, and that's supposed to be liberating. This is where the whole sort of, you know, the utopia becomes a dystopia, because you just think, well, isn't money and isn't Bitcoin or isn't it all about trying to hide the grubby stuff that you don't want anybody else to know, you know? This is why, you know, it's really hard to find out, I think, how you buy drugs without cash, because if you haven't got cash, how are you going to get the drugs without telling everybody that you're buying drugs?
What do you think the answer is? Some people must have an answer to that, right?
Yeah, I think, you know, there are means to do it, I think. Not that I ever have. And I'm not saying this because I'm being pious. But I do think that there are ways in which you can manipulate your payments in such a way that it doesn't look like you're buying drugs. So there's the interesting phenomenon here is the idea of tokens. So instead of being paid in cash, you get paid in tokens. If you're a prostitute, and this is something recorded in Rachel O'Dwyer's rather lovely book called Tokens, which is essentially arguing that money is being replaced by tokens, and tokens are things, you know, yeah, like NFTs or even, this is the weird thing, you know, instead of being paid in cash, you might get paid, you draw up an Amazon gift list and say, you know, you could buy me that, you know. And there are cases, and she narrates cases of prostitutes, for example, saying, you know, you can pay me for my services by buying me that or these, you know, choose something from that, like a wedding list equivalent. And this happens. Maybe that's a model, you know, maybe that's a model that we could follow. Maybe, you know, in the future, people will be buying their drugs in that way, thereby trying to avoid oversight. So it's all about just finding ways of getting paid for your drugs or for whatever that's dubious in ways that isn't going to leave a digital record. That's the challenge, I think. That's the challenge of the future.
For these reasons, you imagine the state is perhaps not delighted, any state, about the growth of this area because it's so associated with something dubious, something underhand. So does that mean that for your ordinary citizen in the street, the only way who isn't interested in doing anything underhand or perhaps doesn't have the technical knowledge to know how, does that mean that... you know, being monitored, being tracked and having data collected and everything you spend, is that going to be inescapable?
Not necessarily. I mean, I think in general, yes, it's going to be more difficult for you to buy stuff or to do stuff without leaving a digital footprint. But there's an interesting thing last summer where the government introduced the idea that they were going to fine banks for not not processing cash. Because they thought that's unfair towards small businesses, which can't afford necessarily to have all the kit. The government wants to make it look as though they're looking after poorer people or smaller businesses who might be struggling in this new regime where cash is no longer there. So you imagine, you know, in rural communities, there aren't many banks. You know, you've got your cash takings from your day, and you've got to drive, you know, hundreds of miles to process it because the bank isn't taking it. So they want to ensure that cash survives, which is a curious thing for a government to want to do, because actually the survival of cash actually makes it harder for them and for, you know, law enforcement authorities to clamp down on, you know, illicit activity. HMRC must, you know, be looking at that kind of initiative and thinking, perhaps don't do that, you know, because actually what we want is for you just to clamp down on you know, dodgy sort of people who aren't paying their taxes. Mm-hmm. And cash actually facilitates that in a way. So getting rid of cash for HMRC and other tax organisations is a good thing. But for governments, they seem to be caught between thinking, yeah, we want to clamp down on illicit activities, but also we want to ensure that people keep cash so that they're not bewildered by this technical world, which they don't really understand, which is true of quite a lot of older people, I think. And two, they want to protect small businesses who find, you know, the marginal costs of, like, buying all these instruments in order to process digital payments. That's going to be a huge burden on their profit margin.
This is also perhaps, you know, a much smaller reason, but recently they were discussing the new notes and new coins for the king. Which obviously have to be created, and, you know, led to a discussion about precisely this: do we still need cash and coins? And one of the things that came up was financial literacy, and children learn to count, you know, using coins and exchanging money, and that's how they learn, you know, the value of or how to complete a transaction. And without cash, that would be a struggle as well. It's a small point, but, you know, there are multiple uses for cash in our society.
I think it's a big point, actually, because I think, you know, so when I buy something with a card or with my phone, I don't really look very closely at, you know, the bill. And I'm not very financially literate. I worry about how my daughter spends her money in that way, because I don't think she necessarily thinks about it. I remember, like, working in a wallpaper shop in the late 70s, my Saturday job, and we had to, you were quite financially literate in a minor way, because wallpaper had an 8% at one point, 8% VAT. So every sale I made, I would have to calculate 8% VAT. It's quite hard. And when they increased it to 15%, I felt this, oh, that's much easier. I can work that out much more readily. So, and actually the giving and taking of change does make you more sort of numerous, I suppose. And all that falls away in a world where you don't really think about what you're paying. And also, you don't think about, if you're not thinking about what you're paying, then maybe, or not particularly scrutinising what you're paying, perhaps you're being ripped off, you know.
Well, Stuart, thanks so much for joining us to talk about the fascinating world of cash and money and to look at the ways in which we now use it. So thanks very much for coming in.
That's great. Thank you. Thank you very much, Ellen. That was great.
Thanks so much to all of our listeners at home. If you enjoyed this podcast, then you can read Stuart's excellent essay, as well as Alan Rusbridger's investigation into how the government captured the BBC, and historian Avi Schlaim's essay on ethnic cleansing in Gaza, by visiting our website at www.prospectmagazine.co.uk. That's all for now, so until next time, goodbye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.